Thank you. Be seated.
Court is ready to hear oral argument from Relator in Lee versus the Honorable Dow.
May it please the court, Mr. Gene Jones will present argument for Relator. Relator is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May I begin with reciting a very brief history of this case. First of all, we exhausted our administrative remedy by asking the Civil Service Commission in Houston to hear this case. They declined. From there, we went to the district court, and the court in December of 1986, the case was tried in December of 1986 before the court, and in February of 1987, the trial court entered a judgment granting relief to the petitioners that included backdated promotions and pay, injunctive relief, declaratory relief, and attorney's fees. Following that, in October of 1988, the Court of Appeals reversed the trial court judgment in its entirety and limited the application of the Act in reference to the Act. The case was tried under 1269M and has now been codified, as this court well knows, as 143 of the local government code, and limited the application of the Act, in their opinion, to those who do police work. They described police work as enforcing the law, making arrests, and conducting criminal investigations. Inasmuch as entry-level police officers and sergeants are the ones who virtually exclusively do that kind of work, the practical application of that holding left out of the Act everyone of the rank of lieutenant and above, inasmuch as they rarely, if ever, enforce the law, make arrests, and conduct criminal investigations. That work is almost always left in its entirety to patrolmen and to sergeants.
That's not to say that they have no power to make arrests or investigations. It's just that they're assigned to other duties.
Their duties do not include, generally, those things that were defined by the Court of Appeals as police work. In following that, in July of 1991, a mandate was issued by this court in enforcement of its opinion, which is already reversed the Court of Appeals in its entirety, remanded to the district court for an entry of a judgment consistent with this court's opinion, and ordered costs against the city.
That opinion was silent as to promotions and back pay and attorney's fees. Was it not? Our opinion of the court was silent as to promotions, back pay, and attorney's fees. It did not speak to those issues.
It did not speak to attorney's fees. I construed it to speak to the promotion of the plaintiffs, which consistently, at least since 1973, in Duckett, in Migna, in Townsend, and not limited to those cases, at every instance where a promotion of a classified officer, firefighter, or policeman has been backdated, the backdated pay came with it together with interest. In every instance, there have been no exceptions to that, to my knowledge. In my mind, Your Honor, the court's opinion, this court's opinion, clearly reversed the Court of Appeals in determining that the 9 positions complained of in the Houston Police Department were filled by non-classified officers or non-classified civilians. Further, by the clear language of your opinion, this court determined that the plaintiffs were entitled to fill those positions, as I could construe your opinion. In looking at Lee versus the City of Houston, the Court of Appeals in San Antonio, quite recently in November, in a case filed United Firefighters Association versus, et al. Versus the City of San Antonio in following and citing from Lee versus the City of Houston in several paragraphs. In a case that was virtually on all fours in a civilization scheme in the City of San Antonio and its fire department, used that as authority to give backdated promotions and pay to several firefighters in the City of San Antonio Fire Department. Every decided case has required, when a classified police officer or firefighter has been displaced, and that they are to have filled the job as of the date that they would have assumed it, but for that displacement or but for that failure to promote, as required back then. Your opinion on its all fours was clear to me on that point. You are correct, Mr. Justice Gonzalez, that you did not speak to attorney's fees. The court in granting writ on this case, I did not speak to granting writ on that issue, but it's been well settled law for more than 30 years to my knowledge that if the court takes up part of a case, they take jurisdiction of all of the case. The issue of attorney's fees is something that I would respectfully submit to you that this court should write on, and it could write on it from two viewpoints, one of which would be the notion of waiver, in that in their motion for reconsideration, the city failed to object to the paying of the granting of attorney's fees.
But in a mandamus proceeding, the issue is, isn't it, whether the trial judge abused his discretion in rendering judgment. How could the trial judge in this case render judgment for relief which this court didn't grant?
Well, it is clear in my mind that this court did grant relief so far as the civilians contravening the act, and it was clear, at least to me, that the civilians, that this court intended for the classified officers to be placed in those positions. Now, this court was silent in regard to attorney's fees, but it did reverse the Court of Appeals in its entirety, who did speak to attorney's fees, did reverse it in its entirety, leaving us either with nothing regarding attorney's fees or with the trial court judgment granting attorney's fees.
Perhaps that was correct or perhaps it was incorrect, but isn't the issue on mandamus whether the trial judge abused his discretion in rendering the judgment that he thought was required under the opinion?
No question, Your Honor. No question.
So perhaps the court should right on attorney's fees, perhaps it shouldn't. All those arguments were made. But after the rehearing was denied, in the last time the case was here, isn't that the last time we can speak to that issue?
I would respectfully submit to you that you could consider it on waiver. I would also respectfully submit to you that inasmuch as you had jurisdiction of the whole case, that you could consider it on statute, because the Act provides for attorney's fees when an appeal is taken by a dissatisfied party from a decision of the Civil Service Commission, that the prevailing party can be granted attorney's fees. We took this matter to the Civil Service Commission. We were dissatisfied in that they refused to hear us. This court could write on attorney's fees from that viewpoint. This is a matter that needs to be settled. This case has been before the court for 7 years, and the city is able to extract from its virtually two million or more people. And while the wage-earning police officers is the one that's been having to bear the burden of this litigation.
Let me focus in on that problem just a little bit, Mr. Jones. Without extending that burden, we have had a lot of time go by. And as far as what is happening now and what is happening over the course of that, is there a need for any other fact-finding by the trial court concerning whether the city is continuing its civilianization process, concerning the existence of any present vacancies that require classified officers?
I see no need at all for fact-finding. The trial court found after a trial that went over some two-week period that these people were entitled as to specific dates and were included in the judgment as to the dates that they should have been promoted and what their rate of pay, the difference of the rate of pay they should have been paid. I see no reason at all for any additional fact-finding, and if there is any evidentiary hearings additionally in this case, I would wager you that it would be back here again. We need to put an end to it.
Is a mandatory injunction the only way to get the job done?
I don't think that an injunction is necessary at all, Your Honor. I believe that we can now enforce this court's definition of a police officer. I feel very comfortable with that. We're simply asking that these people be promoted as of the date that the trial court found that they should have been promoted, together with their back pay and in the emoluments of office that they would have received, and consider, and to please consider writing on attorney's fees in this kind of matter.
What impact do you understand the decision to have on jailers?
I would not consider the decision as it is written, and if you were to simply order promotions and back pay and perhaps write on attorney's fees, that it would have any impact on jailers at all.
Thank you.
One way or the other.
Would the city have to create positions that do not exist if we were to do what you're asking us to do?
No, sir. The positions were in existence and filled by civilians.
And they are all in existence now?
So far as I know.
You state that there is no need for further hearings because this matter has been in the course of 7 years, and it's not so there's no need for fact findings. It's all a matter of law. Is that your argument?
That is my contention, yes.
All right. If it was a matter of law, this court could have done what you're asking us to do when we issued our initial opinion or on rehearing. Could not? If there are no facts to be determined, if it's a matter of law, this court could have very easily done what you're asking us to do today, in its initial opinion or on rehearing.
That is correct.
And the court failed to do that.
Well, as other than for attorney's fees, the court's decision, in my mind, had sufficient clarity for His Honor, Judge Downey, to have given the plaintiffs the promotions together with the back pay. And instead of doing that, I would respectfully suggest that he not only failed to follow the mandate, but he impeded the enforcement of the mandate.
Our opinions stated that we reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals and remand the cause to the trial court for entry of judgment in accordance with this opinion. And he did exactly that, did he not? His mandate states that he's entering judgment in accordance with this opinion.
I would respectfully point to you, Mr. Justice Gonzalez, to page 10 of your opinion, or the majority opinion, that is, where it says, we hold that the challenge to placements contravened the Act's requirements that all covered positions be filled in accordance with the statutory terms. And prior to that, the majority opinion clearly spelled out what the statutory terms were in respect to promotion in the Houston Police Department.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. The court is ready to hear argument from responsible.
May it please the court, Mr. John Fishing, this is an argument for responsible parties.
May it please the court. I would respectfully remind the court that we are here on a writ of mandamus, not an appeal. Mandamus is not sanctioned by this court as a form of interlocutory appeal, and this court has said that the relator has a heavy burden of showing an abuse of discretion by a trial judge. Generally, mandamus will issue in a serious discovery dispute where a party is, for example, ordered to give up attorney work product or attorney-client communications, or where they can't depose an expert witness or some other form of discovery is denied so that they cannot prepare their case.
Well, certainly if we tell a trial judge to take action in accordance with an opinion of this court and he doesn't take it, that's appropriate for mandamus, isn't it?
I would say if, for example, if this court had said we reverse the Court of Appeals and affirm the judgment of the trial court and remand it for further proceedings, then yes.
If he failed to do that, then it would be clearly mandamus.
Absolutely.
And in this case, we've reversed the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals, there's nothing in there to suggest we were only reversing the Court of Appeals in part, is there?
I believe there is.
Where?
Well, there's two places. First of all, the very beginning of the opinion, you said the Court of Appeals held that the Act applies only to positions requiring the performance of law enforcement duties. Because we disagree with that construction of the Act, we reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals.
I didn't say we just reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals in part and affirm in part, which you see in the opinions of this court from time to time.
Yes, you do. And you also see affirming the trial court's judgment.
But when we reverse the Court of Appeals without limiting that reversal by the language in part, it was the Court of Appeals that had itself reversed the original trial court judgment.
On several different points, but
and when the judgment of the Court of Appeals was reversed, did that not have the effect of leaving the trial court judgment pending?
I don't believe so, unless this court specifically affirmed it. And secondly, in footnote 11, you said we do not reach petitioner's contention that the respondent's actions amounted to the abolition of existing classified positions. In effect, you said we're not looking at promotion that were to be made.
But isn't the effect of that and the balance of the opinion that they might have and they might not have, and given this, given our construction of the Act, trial judge should make a redetermination of that?
I think that could have been presented. The relators never asked for an evidentiary hearing on the promotions issue. They simply submitted a judgment, in effect granting the same relief the trial court had originally granted.
Is one appropriate now?
An evidentiary hearing?
Yes, sir. Some kind of fact-finding hearing to determine questions about the status of this civilianization program.
Well, if there's a certain number of assumptions, Justice Dogg, that has to go with that. If you're assuming that a reorganization, a reassignment of duties creates a vacancy, a classified vacancy, then there are questions as to who would have been promoted or not. Now, I submit that under Duckett versus City of Houston, you have written that the actions of a fire chief in simply ignoring vacancies and not filling them has no legal effect, because only city council can create and abolish classified vacancies. Well, I submit the same thing is true here by a chief of police, that by reorganizing and reassigning duties and titles, that has no legal effect, the same as city council creating a classified position. And that's really the issue here, is were there any vacancies to be filled, an issue which this court expressly said they did not intend to reach. Now, I can't stand here and try to tell you what you meant to say by that, but that's what is in the opinion, and that was what Judge Downey was interpreting.
What do you think was the holding of our opinion?
Well, I think, at least as I read it, you were making a statutory construction of Chapter 143 of the Local Government Code. What does it cover? What positions are covered? And there's case law going back to, I believe it's 1936, in Lewis versus City of Fort Worth, where this court has said that a court can declare a legislative act unlawful, but it has to stop there. It can't redo the act that is appropriate for the legislature. So in essence, you would be telling the city council that they must conform to your construction of the act. Now, the issue of attorney's fees, it strikes me as strange that we are told that the city waived it by not raising it in our motion for rehearing when this court didn't even address it. I think it's the relators who waived it. Secondly, they are now asking for attorney's fees under Section 143.015 of the Local Government Code. That was never raised in the Court of Appeals, either in their brief, I've included that in one of our exhibits, or in their motion for rehearing. So they have waived that argument. And they never filed a motion for rehearing in this court saying you should have given us the promotion, you should have addressed attorney's fees, but now they ask you to address that. I submit that they have also waived that.
Are you saying that in light of our opinion, the city council could just decide you don't need to have a head of these various departments?
Well, there's various things, I believe. I think there's various things that you could do. For example, if under this court's mandate, a position in the police department, let's say, I mean, y'all accepted the idea that there can be some civilians and the concept of vertical civilianization. Let's say you had said everybody in the police department is covered by the act, period. Then I still think that city council would have discretion in determining where the function of repairing police cars will take place. Will it take place in the public works department? Will it take place in the police department? I mean, those are the kinds of judgments that city council makes. And certainly, your opinion left that open. And a given function, for example, might not be covered by the statute, but city council might deem that we're going to make it classified anyway. So that there are various choices in the management of the police department, which I believe your opinion left open.
You don't think you have to have a police officer under that opinion heading the auto fleet maintenance department of the city of Houston?
Only if you also have him, the head of that unit, supervising classified employees. In that instance, you have said clearly the job must be classified under the act. And that's, I think, the clearest indication from the court as to where the line is drawn.
So as you read the majority opinion, you feel that there's a way for the city to follow the opinion without having to have the a police officer heading the auto fleet maintenance department.
As I read the opinion and the discussion of vertical civilianization, you have basically said if there's no classified people within the chain of command of that particular unit of the police department, then those can be civilian positions. That's the way I read what the majority wrote.
So to that extent, you disagree with the dissent, which called that one of the absurd consequences of our opinion.
Well, I happen to like the dissent personally.
Well, I thought you might, but I assume from your previous answer that you disagree with its reading and its understanding of the majority opinion.
I do not, because that is the only clear part of the majority opinion is the issue of supervision. Because I don't know how you make the distinction, as we argued in our motion for rehearing, between somebody who does both police work and work in the police department without saying that is a position that involves law enforcement duties. That's just another way of saying it. It's a different wording, but it's really the same formula the Court of Appeals had come up with. And so, to me, the nebulous area is where you remove the supervision issue, and then you got a question of, is this a classified position or not? And I think there is where I have difficulty with the majority's formulation. I mean, and again, the saying that, yes, a police officer, a patrolman is clearly classified, and a clerk or secretary clearly is not, yes, but somewhere in between there, the line drawing gets a little more difficult.
Do I understand your argument to say that if we had placed in the opinion the type of language that relators ask us to do now, that that would have been unconstitutional, or it would have at least exceeded
under the holding in Lewis versus City of Fort Worth, opinion of this court, which has been followed by many courts of appeals, which I believe I cited in my response, there would certainly be a difficult question as to whether you could order, and I disagree strongly with Mr. Jones when he says these positions existed. Yes, they existed by ordinance as civilian positions. They did not exist as classified positions. And to create them, in effect, you'd have to order City Council to pass an ordinance creating these positions.
Are you familiar with the recent case out of San Antonio?
I have not seen that opinion. I was following it simply because the attorney involved there for the city had contacted me regarding this litigation case.
But you have not read it, so you're not confident?
No. Now, I would point out that there are a number of factual issues that remained that it was not simply a matter of handing Judge Downey a reform judgment and saying, sign this, because there are a number of issues as to when these vacancies occurred, if they occurred. For example, they have a reorganization that took place, a reassignment of duties, on January the 20th of 1986, which they deem as the equivalent of four deputy chief vacancies. But I asked the lead plaintiff at volume 3, page 341 of the statement of facts, well, who was hired on January the 20th, 1986? What civilian was hired on that day? His answer, to my knowledge, none. And then secondly, you get the issue of whether or not the city not only could have promoted on that date, but could be compelled to. Now, Bostic versus Owen and others, which I think I've cited in our response, hold that if a vacancy exists for 60 days, the top person on the eligibility list has a right to mandamus the city to promote him. But that means that 60 days would have to elapse after this January 20th reorganization. And even then, although the plaintiffs who were on the captain's eligibility list and the deputy chief's eligibility list would have the right to mandamuses, by the time those vacancies were created to have the ripple effect, the sergeant's eligibility list had long since expired before the vacancy ever occurs. So none of the three or four sergeants supposedly to be promoted as a result of this reorganization would have been promoted or could have brought a mandamus action to be promoted. So I submit that both on the issue of attorney's fees and on the promotion of these sergeants, that Judge Downey did not abuse his discretion in refusing to sign the reform judgment. And I believe that the order he entered is consistent with the instructions of this court. And therefore, I would urge that mandamus be denied.
Would the result be different from your perspective against the city if this court had affirmed the judgment of the trial court?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt. Because the exact relief that the trial court originally granted is the same relief, right down to attorney's fees, that was in the proposed reform judgment that Judge Downey did not enter. If there are no other questions, I'll yield the bulk of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, let me make it clear that the record recites that there are approximately 2,000 civilian employees in the Houston Police Department. We only complain about 9. We have no complaint about the other almost 2,000 members. Additionally, the mandate of this court did not give His Honor Judge Downey the authority, the jurisdiction, to have an evidentiary hearing. As a result, we couldn't have gotten one from him if had we asked for one.
Well, how can he enter a judgment if he doesn't know whether this is a vertical declassification that is permitted under our opinion? Looks in pretty plain language, or some other kind of restructuring that is not permitted. How could he tell that if he didn't have some evidence?
This court found that the 9 civilians that we complained about were in positions in contravention of the act.
We did?
They told Judge Downey that. Had the 9 plaintiffs been promoted, it would have left 7 positions for the other 7 plaintiffs to be promoted to because of the domino effect that takes place in the promotional system. As the evidentiary hearing as to that entitlement of promotion had already taken place in the trial court originally, and it was very specific and very clear as to when the court found that there were positions open that they were entitled to by date. They found the difference in the amount of pay that they should be paid from the time until they were entitled to the promotions until they were paid.
But we wrote, we do not hold that every high-level position in a police department must be held by a classified employee.
We have never disputed that, nor as the trial lawyer did I ever assert at any time that footnote on page 10 or wherever it is about allegations that there had been jobs abolished. I never took that position at trial. The simple fact of the matter is what was occurring was that more often than not, that Chief Brown was hiring a civilian that was in a legal civilian position, not a classified officer's position, and then moving that civilian up as a deputy chief job became open. That was the kind of thing that was going on. I never contended at trial that jobs were being abolished. And for that reason, I never really understood that footnote because that was not our contention. It was not a contention that this court needed to reach. It did not reach it, quite obviously. We do not complain of Judge Downey because he didn't sign our version of the reformed judgment. We complain of Judge Downey because he lacked the discretion to enter any order except one consistent with the opinion of this court. And the order that he entered, Your Honors, is not much more than a cruel joke, and as much as it enforces nothing. If anything, it says to the city, you ought not have done that. And how is that in any way enforcement of what you directed Judge Downey to do? How does that in any way grant any relief to the 16 named plaintiffs that you yourselves, as I read your opinion, determined should have been promoted?
Mr. Jones,
yes, sir.
The this court knows how to write an opinion that states the judgment of the trial court's affirmed. And we've done it in many cases. You can see that. Do you not?
Yes, sir.
And in all fairness to the court and the majority opinion did not affirm the judgment of the trial court. Is that correct?
It did not by clear language. It might have by omission in that that it reversed the Court of Appeals.
And the judgment that you asked Judge Downey to do is to enter exactly the same judgment Judge White had entered for these plaintiffs, and that is enjoin the city and force the city to give these officers the positions they were seeking. Is that not true? And that is what you're asking this court to do now in this mandamus proceeding?
Yes, sir.
If you are correct that Judge Downey's order as it now stands thwarts the whole purpose of this 7 years of litigation, as well as the opinion of the majority of this court, what is it specifically that you would have us mandamus Judge Downey to do?
To enter an order promoting the 16 plaintiffs on the date that was determined in a full evidentiary hearing that they were to be promoted, and consider, Your Honors, whether or not this is the correct case to write on the issue of attorney's fees in face of the statute that gives you authority to do so. And that statute, I might say, it cuts both ways. It permits the prevailing party to get attorney's fees. So it doesn't only run in favor of the classified police officer or firefighter. Those are the two things that I would ask the court to do.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the oral arguments for today. The foregoing arguments are submitted on briefs and oral argument. The marshal will now please adjourn the court.
The audience is rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court.